May it please the court, Tom Vickers, admitted Pro Hoc Vitae on behalf of the appellant, Drake William Steele. It's been over a decade since this court issued its seminal decision in the Auto Owners v. Home Pride case, and I refer to that as a seminal decision because even sitting in Chicago, I was aware of it. It was one of the first state Supreme Court decisions to confront and deal with the issue of whether claims alleging faulty workmanship, construction defect claims, are covered under the standard general liability policy. And what the court did in the Auto Owners case, which has now been replicated in a lot of states, is set out a very simple framework for making this determination. And that framework that was set out in the Auto Owners case is readily applied to this situation here. And simply what the court did is it applied the words in the policy. It didn't get bogged down with public policy issues or questions of other contracts and what effect they may have on other parties. It simply looked at the language of the policy and said, in order to determine if coverage exists, we must first determine if there is property damage caused by an occurrence. That's a simple application of the language in the policy. Now, in this particular case, the district court started to properly apply this framework and went down the road to properly find this, and then first found that Drake Williams Steel's faulty workmanship did in fact cause damage to the pile caps. Pile caps are what are holding up Pinnacle Bank Arena right now. They sit in the ground, and the full weight of the stadium above grade is on top of these pile caps. They are an engineered structure. A key component of their engineering is their ability to withstand load, their load-bearing strength. They bear load not only going down, but going out. And the rebar that my client, Drake Williams Steel, fabricated and delivered to the site, and then they left, was improperly manufactured. The hooks on the ends were too tight. And like a paperclip, if you make the radiuses too tight, they don't have strength going back the other way. From an engineering perspective, this means that the pile caps were weakened. This is a fact that actually in their briefs, the appellee acknowledges on page 4 of their brief. They say the caps were in a weakened state. But really also this case is about all the evidence. Every engineer that testified below, in addition to an engineer who issued an unrebutted expert opinion, said that from a structural engineering perspective, the load-bearing strength of these pile caps were reduced by the incorporation of the faulty rebar, thereby weakening them.
Well, the trial court also reached another determination. It found that there was property damage but no occurrence, and then it concluded that the impaired property exclusion applied in this case. So, essentially, I'm not sure whether the trial court determined that there was coverage to begin with or whatever, but it eventually decided the case on the basis of the impaired property exclusion.
It did, Your Honor, and I do think that what you just pointed out is exactly where the district court went astray. Because first it misstated Auto Owners. Because first the district court said that the majority of courts have said that faulty workmanship cannot be an occurrence. First of all, that's just wrong. The majority of cases haven't said that. Number two, it's clearly not what this court said.
Insurance is a pretty narrowly construed determination of what is coverage, isn't it? And that
case?
Faulty workmanship standing alone does not create an occurrence.
That's correct.
That's the law in Nebraska.
Absolutely. Right. And we have, it's different than what we have here. What we have here, similar to Auto Owners, is we have faulty workmanship that is not standing alone. What we have is faulty workmanship that clearly caused damage to somebody else's property. Critical for this case.
Well, does it make any difference what the engineers finally determined how to correct the problem? Because if they elected to tear out all the pilings
right. And
replace it, that's going to be $5 million worth
that's
of damage.
That's correct, $5 or $6 million.
And your company will have coverage up to $1 million and then would be on the hook for $4
million. Actually, that's not correct, Your Honor, because what we have is a primary policy. That's the EMC policy mm-hmm. for $1 million. Then we have an excess policy that sits above that for $10
million. Okay.
So we would have been fully covered.
Who carries the excess policy?
Columbia Casualty Company or Continental Casualty.
Continental Casualty is the excess of
correct.
$10 million?
Yeah, and that's why there are consolidated appeals here, because EMC denied my client's claim, filed the DJ. We filed the DJ against Consolidated. They were Columbia Casualty, and they were Consolidated.
But ultimately, you agreed with the manner in which they were going to fix this problem.
Absolutely.
But you disagree as to what that fix can be called.
Well, the fix is just that. It's a fix. It's a repair. It's a repair because something was damaged. What was damaged were the pile caps, not my client's property.
Well, were the pile caps impaired by the incorporation of the faulty rebar?
Yes, but they don't meet the definition of impaired property. This is a critical point, and this is another area where this is where the district court erred.
What is your definition of impaired property?
The definition given in the policy, Your Honor, is that for it to be considered impaired property under the policy, it is that only if and only if the impaired property, the pile caps, can be repaired or restored. Let me just quote the language exactly, Your Honor. By the repair, replacement, adjustment, or removal of the rebar of my client's work. In this case,
of the rebar or of the pile cap?
No, the rebar. That's where the district court got it wrong. The district court looked at the pile cap, recognized that that's what was being alleged to be the impaired property, but then conflated the definition of it and said, well, we're just fixing the pile cap, therefore it's not covered. The definition is very specific, and this court actually applied, in the auto owner's case, the impaired property exclusion. It requires that it is impaired only if the impaired property can be restored to use by the repair, replacement, adjustment, or removal of the insured's product. That rebar is still sitting there. It's still sitting there today.
But they adjust the property
by putting
a collar around the pile cap that then allows it to meet the terms of the contract, don't they?
Your Honor, the exclusion is to be narrowly construed, and the literal words used in the policy, and Judge Troyer recognized this in the district court, require that it's the rebar that must be repaired, the rebar that must be replaced, the rebar that must be adjusted, or the rebar that must be removed. None of that was done. It was the pile cap.
Did you have a contractual obligation to remedy this situation?
We did, Your Honor, but that doesn't affect coverage. And as this court even said in auto owners, you make coverage determinations by the language of the insurance policy, not by something else. So the fact that we had a contractual obligation doesn't affect coverage. Numerous courts have said that. This court has said that.
So are we focusing now on really the single issue in this case is whether or not this was impaired property?
I think the singular important issue is whether it was property damage caused by occurrence. Once you get to there, then if we're going to look at impaired property, which is the only exclusion the court applied in analyzing.
Well, I mean, but that's what the court applied in reaching its results.
It did, and it applied it incorrectly because by the literal definition of the exclusion, the pile caps were not impaired property.
Okay, and that's the focus of your argument.
That's the focus.
What about the other exclusions?
I'm sorry?
What about the other exclusions?
Briefly, on the other exclusions, there were 6 asserted below. Only 4 have been asserted on appeal, so I'll only address those. We already talked about the impaired property exclusion. The other exclusion was the contractual liability exclusion. And even as the appellees have recognized, the clear majority of courts have said that this exclusion only applies where the insured has contractually assumed a third party's liability, such as in a hold harmless or an indemnity agreement that I heard about earlier here today. That is not at all what we have in this case. The 8th Circuit, the 5th Circuit, the North Dakota Supreme Court, the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and the American Family case, which this court cited in auto owners, have all held that those only apply for indemnity agreements. In other words, had we agreed to indemnify Mortenson, the general contractor, for injuries sustained by a worker on the site. We don't have that in this case. The only other 2 exclusions are the your work and your product exclusion, and they're really analyzed similarly. And even EMC's own adjuster in the denial letter acknowledged that these exclusions only apply to costs associated with the replacement or removal of DWS's rebar itself. DWS had a lot of other rebar on that site. hadn't yet been cast in place. We pulled that out and replaced it. We never made a claim for that.
We didn't make it.
Exactly. And we knew we couldn't. It wasn't property damage. It wasn't an occurrence. And it'd be excluded under this. The only rebar, only costs we're seeking are for the cost of remedy of the pile caps. That's not our work. It's not our product. Therefore, that exclusion clearly doesn't apply.
And your property damage is that you claim that the pile caps are not suitable for their use because your rebar was placed in there that was faulty.
That's exactly it, Your Honor. That's what every engineer looked at it said as well. See, my time is up. If there's no further questions, I thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And you, sir, are Mr.
Brian O'Gallagher, Judge.
Mr. O'Gallagher, good morning to you.
I'll be speaking on behalf of VMC Insurance Company as well as a Continental Casualty.
I assume you're not conceding that there was even property damage in this case.
No, sir, I'm not.
So, therefore, no occurrence.
Correct.
Therefore, no coverage.
Correct.
Don't get to even the impaired property exclusion.
You don't need to, but if you were to get there, the analysis laid out by the trial court is correct.
Well, why does the impaired what is the impaired property we're talking about? Is it the rebar within the pile caps, or is it the pile caps themselves that are the impaired property as part of the whole picture?
Well, Drake has argued the pile caps are the impaired property because it's the pile caps that sustained property damage. Now, the carriers disagree with that initial assertion that the pile caps, in their unmodified state, sustained property damage. We can talk about that later. But for purposes of analyzing the impaired property exclusion, the pile caps, which incorporated the inadequately fabricated rebar, which needed the reinforcement, was the impaired property.
How can you separate the pile caps from the rebar?
Well, I think that's a good point. The pile caps are, the evidence established quite clearly, they consist entirely of rebar and concrete that surrounds it.
As a remedy, you can't replace the rebar within the pile caps. That's not practical, is it? Because
it
the cost of doing that would be in excess of $4 or $5 million.
And there was no need to do that from an engineering perspective. But the concrete itself, to your point, again, the pile caps are two components, the rebar, which was inadequately fabricated, and the concrete. There is no evidence that even in the unmodified state, the concrete was cracking, splitting, fracturing, or it sustained any physical injury. In fact, the evidence is quite clear that other than 26 pile caps that contained this rebar where their placement in the structure required modification, the rebar remained in the building, unmodified, no reinforcement whatsoever, in the building's columns, in the building's grade beams, and 26 other pile caps. But there was nothing inherently injurious about the rebar in the pile cap.
Except that it lacked half of its strength that was required for support and would, in some instances, cause the structure to fail.
Well, the concern was that
that's a future accident. That would be covered under the policy.
Well,
that would be an act that occurred to somebody else's property if the building itself failed.
The concern was, exactly right, Judge. The concern was that had the construction of the structure continued without modification in the future, and the evidence was quite clear on this, it was in the future, at some point the engineers believed there could have been a loss of structural integrity in portions of the building.
Because the rebar installed in the pile caps in question had half the tensile strength required because of the too tight a bend on the rebar.
Correct.
Am I hearing you correctly that the concrete piles were not damaged, and that's the property that should have been damaged?
We contend they were not physically injured. The property damage definition, Judge, has two components. Requires physical injury to tangible property. And I'm talking now about the rebar in its unmodified state before it's reinforced. In its unmodified state, the concrete wasn't damaged and the rebar wasn't damaged. So there's no physical injury to that unmodified pile cap. Now, the property damage also has a second component, which is the loss of use of tangible property that's not physically injured. I would submit because of when this problem was protected, which was during the construction of the building. The use of the pile caps and the larger use of the structure was never interrupted.
And would you agree that the defective rebar impaired some of the pile caps?
If you get to the impaired property judge exclusion, you need to first accept the premise that the pile caps in which the rebar was incorporated sustained property damage. I don't concede that point, but again, if we do, if you want to analyze the impaired property exclusion, you then come to the question of what happened with the fix.
The opposing counsel says this impaired property definition doesn't apply because it's only dealing, it's the rebar that's impaired and not the pile cap.
That's inaccurate, Judge. If you look at the
I don't want to misquote. Isn't that the argument? That it's the rebar that's the impaired property, and therefore it doesn't apply to this particular case?
That may be his argument, Judge, but if so, that's not correct. Mm-hmm. I mean, the impaired property definition, I'm going to read it for the court. It's a little bit hard to follow. It's all in the record, obviously. But impaired property, as defined by the policies, means tangible property other than your product or your work. So the impaired property can't be the rebar, other than your product or your work, that cannot be used or is less useful because it incorporates your product or your work that is known or thought to be defective, deficient, inadequate, or dangerous, or cannot be used or is less useful because you, as Drake, have failed to fulfill the terms of a contract or agreement. That's exactly what we're talking about here. If you accept the premise that the pile caps were damaged, they are damaged if they're damaged at all because they incorporate inadequately fabricated.
And the contractor's position was that you hadn't fulfilled your obligations under the contract because you gave us bad rebar.
Exactly right. There was a warranty provision in the contract that's quoted in the briefs that said that Drake would be responsible for correcting the cost of any inadequately supplied materials, which is exactly what happened. The exclusion goes on to provide that the exclusion will cover expenses incurred to remedy the property if the property can be restored to use by the repair, replacement, adjustment, or removal of the insured's product or the insured's work or by the insured fulfilling the terms of the contract or the agreement. Now, again, if you accept the premise that the pile caps sustain property damage, these pile caps are modified, then the impaired property exclusion covers exactly what happened after that. There is a purchase agreement in place between Drake Williams and Mortenson whereby Drake was responsible for the cost of correcting any inadequately fabricated rebar. Mortenson asked Drake to pay for the cost of the reinforcement and some of the pile caps. Drake paid those costs, and then those pile caps, if they were injured, were restored to use by Drake fulfilling the terms of the purchase agreement. So really the exclusion here, again, if you accept the original premise that the pile caps were damaged, which I don't, but if you accept that premise, the impaired property exclusion does cover, the expenses we're talking about. Remember, the expenses we're talking about are the expenses incurred for the reinforcement. They fall right within the scope of the impaired property exclusion.
I mean, you're saying that they had to make the modification because the rebar didn't meet the qualifications when it was installed within the pile cap.
Oh, exactly right, Judge. I mean, counsel made reference to the expert engineer that they submitted his report in the trial court. This is Exhibit 44 in the record. Their engineer, Mr. Storm, says that the perimeter band, this is the concrete column method, was designed to replace the material and strength of the original reinforcing bar hooks that were considered to have an adequate and or unreliable capacity. We understand these retrofits, this is their engineer, were completed successfully with minimal disruption to the progress of the overall arena construction. So you have their experts.
So the retrofitting would have made DWS in compliance with its contract.
Absolutely.
But somebody had to pay for the retrofitting.
Correct. And it's the warranty provision, the purchase agreement, they said they would pay the cost of non-conforming materials.
And ultimately they did that.
They did that.
And the question is was there coverage under that?
Well, and the other point to notice, Judge, is that if they didn't do that, the evidence was quite clear. We deposed the Mortenson representatives The Mortenson representatives were not going to pursue these costs from Drake. They were going to draw down on the performance bond that Drake had also furnished as part of its...
But is that really material to our interpretation of the contract?
I think it is, Judge, because these policies only apply to amounts the insured is legally obligated to pay. And what Drake is asking the court to do is order its insurance carriers to pay an amount that Mortenson was never going to seek to recover from Drake. Okay.
Taking a step back to some of the comments you were making earlier, is it my understanding, and I'm going to exaggerate here a little bit, that if the building fell down because of bad rebar, you would be liable under the policy?
Judge, the insurance carrier that had written the coverage at the time of that event of property damage that you described would be liable, because the policies only apply to property damage that happens during their effective period. The policies do not apply to amounts incurred to prevent future property damage. This is very clear in the insuring agreement of the policies. They only apply to property damage that occurs during their effective periods, and the testimony by the engineers in this case was established that whatever form that structural failure might take in the future, they didn't know when it was going to happen and what form it might take. But you're correct. The carriers on the risk at that point in time would have a valid property damage.
So, and I suppose this is a policy argument. Isn't it bad policy to say that you are not liable to insure for fixing the problem, but you would be liable if the problem actually happened, if the building fell in?
I would tell you no, Judge, because the worst policy is to allow contractors to skirt on their obligations to erect safe, to erect a building that's going to withstand and not be subject to future property damage by shifting those costs to their insurance carriers. This is a contract case. These are expenses that Drake knowingly and deliberately undertook. The parties planned for what would happen if improper material was furnished. They agreed who would pay. Drake was going to pay. And their insurance, their liability insurance, has nothing to do with it. I'm out of time.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
No.
There is no time for rebuttal. That concludes arguments for the day. The court is adjourned, and you are excused.